Sherry, are you online?
Sherry's not.
Oh, that's right, she said she wasn't gonna be able to call in. KUCB, are you online? Steve, Steve of HR Gov, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you. Is there anybody else online that I haven't noticed? I'm gonna, since we got a major agenda, I'm gonna try and keep moving if we can. Well, now may I might reconsider. No. Well, I'm taking number five off under new business. That's going away. Well, we didn't know. I didn't know until that was when they were coming in person. So. No. I got it. Wynn Brindle always said, remember where your day job is and who gives you your check.
Yeah.
Can I go on a trip to the city? Remember where you work. Who gives you your paycheck? Okay, one more minute. Called to order the regular city council meeting of November 28, 2017. Madam Clerk, can we have a roll call?
Coleman? Coleman? Is that one?
Coleman? Roland?
Here, and my mic doesn't work.
Fine.
Are they on down there?
There,
now it's on.
Okay. Thank you, Roxanna. So Roland is here, obviously. Robinson?
Present.
Tungle?
Here.
Gregory?
Here.
Fitch?
Here.
And Kelty?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Okay. Is that because my mic is on?
That was me, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I'd like to welcome everybody to our meeting tonight, and we've got a quite large agenda. We'll try and keep it moving as best we can. Will you please join me with the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Recognition of visitors. We have our library. You want to introduce him, PCR?
Tonight we have with us Brian Meiser from Storage Group. Brian Meiser, the group who's going to help us with our library presentation tonight. We're thankful he got here, and the work that he did for us tonight really couldn't be done telephonically or not with us. So we're very thankful he got here.
Yeah, it was great, and we had a very good presentation last night at the library. So thank you. Any other visitors? Yes, James.
I'd like to introduce Darlene Dales, Douglas Allen. She is our new CFO over at IFHS. We actually have a CFO now on site, and her husband Rick. They joined us in about a month.
5 weeks tomorrow.
5 weeks.
And they already got used to the weather. They have a beautiful brand new Dutch caravan or Dodge caravan. And the door already went berserk and caved in the front end. But still looks pretty good. Anyway, welcome to Unalaska, and I hope you enjoy your working time and your pleasure time in the community. Any other visitors?
Mayor Kelty, Brooks Chandler, our city attorney, is with us this evening.
Hello, Brooks. Nice to see you.
Hello.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay, we'll move on to additions to the agenda, and I have a couple myself, and then we'll see if council members have any. The first one is under public hearing. We need to add ordinance 2017-14 budget amendment number 2. It's up for second reading, so we'll have the public hearing, and if you want to comment on the public hearing, all you have to do is raise your hand and we'll call on you. And then under new business, number 5, we're deleting Mayor's travel for Barrett Tanner Crab Workshop. We've got a conflict with city manager candidates coming into town. So we can delete item 5. Okay, council, anything else? Manager? Okay, that takes care of that. We'll move on to get a motion for approval of the minutes of the October 24th. 2017 meeting.
Make a motion to approve the minutes of October 24th, 2017.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Okay, any discussion on the minutes? Hearing no discussion. All in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Minutes are approved, 5-0. Okay, move on to our financial report. It's in your packet, and we I think this is the first time we've had Clay before us, and welcome, Clay.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to present this information, and we're going to try to make sure that it's in the packet going forward, but I just wanted to cover a few of the variance items between our actual results and our budgeted expectations, and then in some instances compared to the prior year. And on the first page of the memo, in the fund department highlights section, you see that we received our Alaska Fisheries Business Shared Tax and the Fisheries Resource Landing Taxes in October this year, and in the prior year that was received in November. So more on the fisheries tax, if you turn to page 3. In the revenues section.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
I'm not referencing a memo anywhere. I'm not sure where I should be looking.
It's on the first
page. On the screen.
Yeah.
Okay.
We got the memo emailed to us late yesterday.
Not to me, I don't think. Maybe my email wasn't working. I don't know. I'll do it this way, I guess. Yeah. Thanks.
Well, do you want us to get a copy in the back, if there's any left of the financials?
I'll cover everything on that memo that I was going to discuss on page 3. In the revenue section, you see on the second and third lines up above, we have the fisheries taxes with the budgeted information in the first column, and then the actual receipts for October in the next column. So we had 9.2 budgeted. Actual receipts were $7.9 million, giving us a shortfall of $1.3 million. But Mayor Kelty has informed me that we will receive approximately $800,000 more. That's our expectation before the end of the year.
Right. The extraterritorial tax that comes from the Department of Commerce is always trailing this, and that mostly goes into the resource landing. So that should pump that up. If it's $700,000, that will get it. We'd still have a shortfall, but it'd be $300,000 shortfall. It's a lot better than what it looks like right now. We're not too far off on the Alaska Fisheries Business Tax, and most of that revenue is we had no Tanner Crab season last year, which affected the raw seafood tax and the Alaska Fisheries business, and then market conditions on some of the product probably impacted the resource landing tax.
Thank you. So just with the change that we've seen so far, if we move to the bottom of this report and the budgeted surplus, we were at $3.7 million in surplus. With this adjustment, that would put us at about a $2.5 million surplus. Adding the $800, we're at $3.2 million in surplus. So still in good shape. Overall, this report looks good. On the next page, another one of the significant changes is on page, and we're on page four, the electric proprietary fund. The revenues increased over the prior year, approximately $600,000, and that's driven by increases in the price of diesel passed through to our customers with the COPA adjustment shown below in the electric production line at $573,000. So our revenues are up, but the costs driving those revenues are also up. And then on page five, the next page, the Ports and Harbors Proprietary Fund, just the overall revenues compared to the prior year have increased $300,000. And then finally, on page six, we have the utility revenue report summary. We have the months on the left with the numerical information for each utility type shown in the columns. And then the totals I'm referring to will be over on the second from the right. We had 8.9 million, almost 9 million in revenues year to date for all utilities combined, compared to 8.5 million in the prior year. So we're up a half a million in our utilities for the first 4 months of our fiscal year. That's all I had prepared. Prepared to answer questions if there were any.
Council, questions for Clay? Well, once again, welcome aboard, Clay, and we look forward to working with you, and especially when we get to budget time here in a couple months.
We're looking forward to it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Well, that moves us to, we don't have any board and commission reports, but we do have Planning Commission meeting minutes of July 20th and August 17th. Council, anybody have any comments on that? Hearing no comments, we'll move right into the City Manager report. Nancy.
I do have a written report in the council packet. I don't have anything else to add, but I'm happy to answer questions.
Council? Well, I guess I do have one question, and I alerted you that I wanted to bring it up, and it has to do with the airport parking. I'm still getting complaints from residents, mostly people that are seniors and single people, about having to get their leaving their vehicle unattended while they try and check a bag, and I think that could be a problem with some of the elders as well. Sometimes the elders have a helper with them to get them into the terminal, and the car is there, and they have the potential of getting ticketed because it's unattended. So I'm just bringing it up. I told the members of the community that I would bring it up, and I would hope there was some kind of leeway and situations like that could be looked at. Anyway, that's about all I have. Any comments, Council? Okay. Dave.
Yeah, so I was kind of wondering that too. Is there a grace period that someone might have? You need to pull up to the curb, run in, check their bag in, and then try to get back out, move the car before getting a ticket?
Deputy Chief Shockley.
Deputy Chief Jennifer Shockley. We don't have any kind of formal grace period for something like that, but it is tickets are issued at the officer's discretion. So typically, if an officer has the occasion to be able to actually speak to the driver in question and determine what the circumstances are, there's certainly discretion on the part of the officer if they think a ticket's warranted under the specific circumstances. But we don't have any kind of formal grace period or 90-second clock or anything like that.
Dave, follow up?
So they'd see the car, go in, try to identify the driver, find out if they're sitting in the restaurant having supper, that's one thing. They're standing in line trying to check a bag, that's another thing. And that.
It would depend on the specific circumstances, but typically what an officer would do is run the vehicle to determine who owns the plate. If they know the person, they may go into the facility and try to find them. If they don't know them, sometimes Pinair will do announcements for us. But if they're unable to locate the person, then there's really not a whole lot of options in terms of trying to figure out what the situation is.
Thank you.
Okay. Dennis?
Change is always hard. And I think the problem we have is we have to have these rules in place because there will always be those that abuse the rule. And I mean, I feel bad that we have to do this, but in order to keep that area clear for real work, I believe what is being done is necessary.
Thank you. Other council member comments? Okay, well, we had our say on that. But I guess I have a question. There was no problems to Nancy, to the port director, with the Akatan, and I understand there were some vessels that broke loose at the spit dock.
Correct. The Akatan did stay anchored as it was supposed to, which is a good thing. We did have some, I believe it was three vessels, Scott, three vessels at the spit dock that did break loose. And Mr. Brown, if you want to just share circumstance, that'd be great.
Yeah, we had three vessels that did break loose. One was a cleat that pulled loose, and the other was the lines parted. Fortunately, we had all our crews there. All the vessel watchers happened to be on the dock at the same time, working with other vessels. Dunlap Towing, great people to work with. They zipped out there real quick, pushed boats to the dock, towed some of the boats that we needed to get out of the area, and we put them over at the UMC. And there was no damage to the dock other than the cleat, and there was damage to the vessels, and they're working that through their process with each other.
Thank you, Scott. Any questions for Scott? Roger.
I do, and this wasn't scripted, so forgive me if I'm throwing something at you, but I at times do a little boat watch for somebody when they're out of town, and I've been involved when a boat broke loose, and I thought it was very poor planning. In my experience, it was several years ago or a couple years ago, a cleat had pulled out, and it seemed there was a whole lot of faith put in that cleat, probably too much faith. I think there were five boats with lines to a single cleat, and the wind blows a certain direction. So I'm just wondering, Mr. Mayor, through you, through the manager, whatever, is there any kind of a policy to, because you guys are pretty smart. You see this happen. Can you like, hey, guys, we need to figure out another way to tie this, or is there a way to maybe eliminate too much effort on one cleat? Long-winded question. Thanks.
Yeah, I think the situation that you're addressing was the FCA boats a few years ago, and then we had them three out. We do. We've added more cleats out there. When they did the remodel, they didn't box the cleats in, so they weren't as beefed up. So currently we're working on getting some quotes to add additional cleats out there, as well as ensuring that the ones that we do have are have more support added to them to ensure that. But yeah, the idea is not to put too many boats on the line. And that was a thing in the past that might have happened, but it's not an issue now.
Thank you, Scott. Okay, last go around for questions on the manager's report. Hearing nothing, we'll move on to awards. And we have a recognition that I'm going to do, and going to have volunteer Captain Salvador Alvarado, if you could come over by the podium. I think many people in the community know that you received a statewide award just recently in Anchorage. There's a picture of it there at the Hilton, at the Egan Convention Center, that you were EMS Provider of the Year. On November 10th, 2017, Volunteer Captain Salvador Alvarado was awarded the Governor's EMS Provider of the Year Award at the 43rd Annual EMS Symposium in Anchorage. Captain Alvarado was selected from 43 nominees for his actions during the December 3rd, 2016 incident at Klosterboer Cold Storage. Salvador has been a dedicated volunteer for 15 years and continues to show dedication and pride in the community of Unalaska. And congratulations on receiving the award. Harley to come up and maybe say a few words also, who's our chief. But as someone who worked in the seafood processing industry, I had a few ammonia events happen to me, and it's not fun, and it's really, you know, it's serious business when you have that, and you responded so well to get that employee of Klosterboer out of danger. Really, that was outstanding work. Harley?
I was one of my most dedicated volunteers. I just arrived here very shortly, and within a few weeks, I realized how dedicated this individual is. Very smart individual. He's a great asset to have on a fire scene, or any EMS scene for that matter. It's very rare for a community to have somebody like this. Very dedicated. He has all the certifications that is rare for both sides, EMS and fire, which is awesome to have. Also, this individual, the decisions that he made on this incident is very rare to be making it consecutive like he did. Because as a matter of fact, there's a couple of the ones that you'd actually would not do per the book wise, but he actually used common sense and his knowledge of the ability of the body to realize that if he did it that book way, that patient would not be alive today. So by him actually, the experience that he's had in the years that he's done, he actually gave this person a good chance of survival, which the guy actually made it, which is almost rare, and even lower 48, let alone in Alaska. So, great job, sir.
Not just me who made, you know, that effort happen. It was just all the members. We worked together. I told them about the palm oil. You know, everybody knows what kind of experience I have. I've been working for a fisheries company for over 25 years. I've been working for a fishing company for more than 25 years, so I got quite a bit of experience dealing with ammonia incidents several times. So I was exposed to the scenario, and it just happened that I came in at the right time, and I saw the scenario, evaluated, and make the right decision. So with the support of everybody, everything went well. So thank you.
Thank you. Great job, and it's really great that you got that statewide award. That's really an honor. So, okay, we're going to move on to community input and announcements. I'm going to start it off. I want to send an apology to Deputy Chief Shockley. Two meetings ago, there was language that was used at a meeting, and I didn't step up and shut it down like I should have. So I want to give my sincere apologies for allowing that to happen, and it won't happen again. And, you know, so I didn't know it was going to happen, but I got to be, if I've got the gavel, then I've got to use the gavel if things are getting out of control. And I didn't do it. And for that, I sincerely apologize. Okay. Announcements. I have another one, and that would be to PCR for the beautiful Christmas tree lighting that we turned on last night. So good job, PCR, for that. Okay, other community announcements.
Demon Tierberg, so I have a couple. So on behalf of Girl Scouts, I just want to thank the community for the generous donations to the annual food drive. It's always a great success. We actually extended it this year because USAFE was running low. So just thank you to all of the individuals that donated in our various locations. And then on behalf of Arts Council, I want to announce that this Friday, December 1st, we're holding our first Fridays from 6:30 to 8:30 at Expedition Park, or if this weather continues, it'll be at Museum of the Aleutians. For those of you who don't know, First Fridays is a new program for Arts Council this year. There was a lot of push from some of our younger artists in town to have a regular meeting that was free of charge, so Arts Council is trying to make that happen for them. So it's every first Friday from August through May. And then also on Saturday, in conjunction with PCR's Christmas event, we will have the annual Arts and Crafts Fair. It starts at 1 p.m.
Thank you. Okay. Yes, Bond.
Our Unalaska Raiders volleyball team made it out today to play for the state. They're gonna start playing on Thursday, so they'll be playing at Diamond School in Anchorage. So I hope they're gonna televise or have it on the radio so we can all listen. Starting Thursday is their first game.
Okay, go Raiders. Anything at the school, John?
Yes, also at the school, and thanks for that shout out, Bong. We're all wishing the Raiders great luck, and it was just fortunate they got out today. It's also the start of the holiday season at the schools. We have we'd like to invite the community and parents to Poetry Out Loud on December 5th. That's in the school auditorium. And then our holiday band concert will be on December 11th at 7 o'clock in the big gym. And the most popular Eagles View Elementary winter program will be also in the big gym on December 13th. Both those events are at 7 o'clock. Our wrestlers will be flying out next week for their regional tournament in Bethel, and basketball season starts tomorrow.
Wow. Okay, thanks, John. Other comments, Dennis?
Piano recital on Sunday at 2 at the school auditorium.
Okay. Other comments? Yes, sir.
If you want to keep supporting our local volunteers like Salvador, we have our Firefighters Ball, annual Firefighters Ball, December 2nd at the Grand, so you can buy tickets from your local favorite volunteer firefighter. Thank you.
How much are they?
$50 a ticket to support, you know, us at the firefighters.
Okay. Thank you. That's always always a good shindig to attend. Okay. Anything else? Yes, Holly. PCR.
On Saturday, as part of the whole fun time that we're having at PCR, we're having a Santa fun run. So come out and enjoy it, and run down and enjoy this the Christmas season, a way to celebrate Christmas by running.
Okay, I think there might be snow in the forecast, but no big.
And what time is that? What time is it going to start?
Okay, look on channel 8 on the roll around.
According to the KCB calendar, it starts at 2:30.
There you go.
2:30. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Anything new on the clinic? You already introduced the new CFO. Okay. There's no other announcements. So I guess I do have one. There's still Lions selling raffle tickets for our Santa program that we do every year. And I think I'll be making an appearance at the stores the next couple of days trying to sell tickets. And Harriet Barakoff usually works the night shift with Janice at the Safeway selling tickets. So $20 a ticket, and the cash payout is $6,000, $3,000, $2,000, and $1,000. And there's some smaller ones, right? John? 2,000, not 3,000? Oh, I read my ticket wrong then.
Well, if I win, I'm going to get that extra 1,000.
That's right. Not from me. Okay. We're going to move on, unless there's anything else. Okay, we're moving on. Any public testimony on agenda items? Now, this is, if there's something on the agenda that you can't stay for the whole evening, you could give us your public comment now. All you have to do is come up to the microphone. Okay, we're not hearing any. We'll move on to our public hearing tonight. We have one public hearing, and that is on Ordinance 2017-14, Budget Amendment Number 2, to creating a budget amendment to transfer $500,000 from the general fund budgeted surplus to increase the grants to nonprofits to help fund the Ilioque Family Health Services Emergency Assistance Support Request. On public hearings, all you have to do is raise your hand and get a mic and testify. And this will also be on the agenda later on. Under unfinished business, if you want to address it at that time, you have to sign up with the clerk, and we'll call on you when we get to that agenda item, and the same goes for a new business. Okay, public hearing is open. Okay, nobody wishing to testify, we'll close the public hearing and move on to our work session agenda. We have five items on the agenda tonight, and the first one is city manager recruitment update and schedule. And we do have HR Gov on the phone.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to walk the council through the refined schedule that we have for the city manager recruitment. Tonight, So the just a very quick preliminary overview of the where we are with candidates. We currently actually now have 39 applications to date. There have been the GovHR has been working through those candidates, verifying their qualifications, doing additional contact and interview and research. We have 8 candidates at this stage that fully meet the qualifications for the city manager candidate. We're very happy about that. And they are currently being screened by GovHR to a higher degree. We would like to schedule the executive session on December 2nd for the council to be able to review the applications. One of the components that GovHR is doing on our behalf, instead of a telephone interview with each of the candidates, each candidate has a personal interview, that video interview that they are completing, and we will have that opportunity on Saturday to review those interviews, review their full application. GovHR will provide you with a recap of each of the candidates and their recommendations for bringing forth the candidates at that point. So we are looking for an executive session on the 2nd of December to do that review. And then also tonight I have a proposed on-site schedule and proposed panel for some additional little interview panels for the candidates with here. So if we could go over that. So the on-site interview schedule would include that the candidates would arrive on Sunday, December 17th. We'll have a dinner with them, just talking with the candidates about the process. On Monday the 18th, we would do a facility tour with the candidates, lunch with the department directors, and then we're proposing a series of panels to, number one, to give the candidates a little bit more background on the community as they pose questions. They might ask a question about, you know, say that the utilities, the 4 utilities that we have here in Unalaska, there's concern that possibly we're reaching the capacity on those utilities. How would you approach developing a plan to go forward? Something that gives them a little meat of what's happening in the community in those interviews, just to help them get up to speed on the community and give them the best chance of providing a good interview for you, the city council, on the following day. So we have 3 panels that we're proposing to do that. One would be department directors, one would be community leaders, and one would be the advisory commission members. The city has PCR planning and library advisory committees, and to have representatives from each of those as part of one of the panels as well. So, looking at what we did the last time for the city manager candidates, our recommendations would be on the next page, that the community leaders panel would be someone from a representative from the school district, OC, Q Tribe, the clinic, an industry sector representative, and a nonprofit sector representative to reach out and have those individuals represented on one of those panels. And then any others that the council might have as well. So going back to the schedule, so Monday they would be doing the tour, they'd be doing these little interview panels, and then they'd have an opportunity to have dinner with the council on Monday night. You'd be in a much more informal arrangement, and then Tuesday we would set aside at least 2 hours with each of the candidates for your formal interview of the candidates. And then on Tuesday evening would be the community-wide meet and greet to allow members, all members of the community, to come meet the candidates. So that, and then Wednesday would need to be, you know, a deliberation of the candidates and selection of whom you choose. And I put 9 to 12, but whatever the time frame is that the council needs. So that's the recommendation right now for the rest of the schedule for the candidates.
Okay, questions for Nancy? Dennis?
Now, the industry sector, I mean, there's a couple of segments of industry here that are just quite a little bit different. There's shipping, and then, of course, our fishing. Mm-hmm. Is there any possibility we can contact somebody from one of the shipping companies to participate in this?
The council can, you know, let me know what your desire is, and we'll reach out to those folks.
I think that's a good idea.
So someone from the fishing side and from the shipping side? Okay.
Other comments? And on Saturday, this coming Saturday, how many applications are we going to be going through?
Eight.
Oh, eight.
Mm-hmm. And it'll be a very succinct report. You'll be able to see each of the candidates side by side. You'll be able to and Mr. Veach will go through the packet of information and give you all of the information on each of those. You will have it a day in advance. You'll have a written packet, but that morning he will also walk you through that information. And I should say morning. It's up to the council. You let me know what time you'd like that session, whether it's something like 9 to noon or 1 to 4, what works best for your schedule on Saturday.
Okay. Roger.
I prefer mornings.
I prefer mornings.
I guess we go morning.
So
I'm an afternoon person, but
is 9 o'clock start time? Okay,
that's good.
Okay, so here
day
at the
is half over by then.
Coffee ready at 8:45.
We'll have coffee. You bet. Even some donuts.
Okay.
And Mr. Veach is on the line if council has any specific information, but he just dialed in case you did. If you don't, we're good to go.
Okay, any questions for Steve? Okay, Steve, we look forward to seeing what you're bringing to us, and we'll talk again on Friday. Have a good evening.
Or Saturday.
Thank you.
Oh, Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay. That takes care of that. That's a work session agenda item. Does any members of the public have a comment? Okay, seeing none. We'll move on to our next agenda item, which is a presentation, and it is on the Library Improvement Project, and we'll go to the PCR Director.
Thank you very much, Council. This has been before you before. We've had a number of discussions. We've had a number of public meetings. Many of you have been part of that. Tonight we have for you, Karen's going to give you a little update of the background of what we've done. And then Brian Meisner of the Fornicker Group, who was hired by Rasmussen Foundation. If you remember, they came down and took a liking to what we were doing, gave us a grant to allow Brian to be here tonight. And so he will be giving you the results of the public meetings that we've had with the community. With that, I'm going to turn the time over to Karen and Brian.
Mayor and Council, good evening. So the goal of tonight's presentation is both to give you some background on the library building improvement project and also to update Council on the progress we've made in this project or in the current fiscal year. And as Roger just mentioned, architect Brian Meisner from ECI Alaska is here, and you'll be hearing some design ideas from him in a moment. But first, I'll give you a brief background of the project just to get everyone up to speed. So since the library was built, community needs have changed, and we've identified several places we could really do a better job of serving the public. The community has asked for improvements in the children's room, in meeting and study space, in the teen area, and in seating. So to address those shortcomings, the city has placed the library on the CMMP, the city's capital projects list, with pre-development happening this year in FY18 and potential design and construction later down the road. So you may be asking yourself, what exactly is pre-development? Brian will talk a little more about this, but basically it means taking a look at our current building, talking to the staff and the public about community needs, which we've been doing, and coming up with concept level designs and very general budget estimates so City Council can make an informed decision about how to proceed. As part of the CMMP, the city budgeted $42,500 for pre-development this year, but as Roger mentioned, this stage of the project will actually be covered by a grant, so that's great because it saves the city some money and it also allows an objective outside group to tell us exactly what's the right size for this project. We're currently midstream. The timeline is from August 2017 to February 2018. So the architect was here in August to hear from the community and staff initially about Unalaska's library needs. He took those comments and input and turned them into concept designs and very preliminary cost estimates, which he presented to the public last night and you'll get to see tonight. And in February, he'll be back with concept designs more fully developed and a recommendation for council. And then council will decide how to proceed during the FY19 CMMP budget approval process. So that gets you all up to speed about where we are right now, and I'm going to hand it to Brian and you can see what he's been working on.
Okay, I just need to get plugged in. It's created a buzz. Is that buzz coming from here? Should I go in spite of the buzz? I'm going to go in spite of the buzz. Let me unplug and then replug. Yeah, that is this creating the buzz.
Well, if you wanted, you could plug that in and then take the mic and the
back. No? Not working out. Can we live with the buzz? We're going to live with the buzz. Okay, so Forker Group Pre-Development is a program that was established by the Rasmussen Foundation, the Mental Health Land Trust, and the Denali Commission. And it was in response to projects that were happening in the late 90s and early 2000s that were being overbuilt in Alaska. And I was involved in one of those projects. And the discussion about that project led to this pre-development program. That project was St. Paul Clinic. And that clinic was driven size-wise by Indian Health Service requirements, the IHS requirements. It's a very big clinic, 21,000 square feet in a town of 700. It does serve the crab fishing fleet, but it caused the funders to step back and say, wait a minute, we need a program to right-size projects before they come to the point of being built. And that was a time when Ted Stevens was doing amazing work and bringing money, but sometimes that money was creating projects that were then hard to operate afterwards. So Forker Group Pre-Development was set up so that when Rasmussen and the Mental Health Land Trust and Denali Commission consider a project, they know that it's been through a process of right sizing. And so it's all about right sizing. So as an architect, in this case, I work for the Rasmussen Foundation because they're funding the grant through Forker Group Pre-Development. And that puts me in a position to sometimes say no to the sizing of things rather than always yes, make it bigger. And our goal is that at the end of it, it's a project that's right-sized for the community, in this case on Alaska, so that it can be sustainably funded after operations. And with a library project like this, we like to try and make it so that it won't force an increase in staffing. you're going to increase some of the operating costs through energy just through increasing the footprint. But ideally, if it's designed right, we don't increase staffing as well. So it's to create something that can both be capitally funded and then operated afterwards without overburdening the organization. And it happens for all kinds of nonprofit projects. Pretty much everything that gets Rasmussen funding now graduates from pre-development as a project that's been shown to be sustainable. So my job here is to help figure out what the library needs. And I work on a lot of libraries. I've designed libraries in Juneau, Wasilla, Nome, three on the Kenai Peninsula. So I love designing libraries. My mom was a librarian, so I'm really happy to be here. It's a hard place to get to, but I was really glad to be able to get in here yesterday because we did some really great work today, and last night's public meeting was good. All right, so I want to start with an overview of the outside of the library. So you're looking at the front here. This library is surprisingly tightly packed onto its site, but there are opportunities that I was encouraged after the first public building to look at where these inset parts of the building happen. This is around the back. Now, because of the shape of the roof, it also makes it challenging to add onto this. When you add onto a gable roof, it's easy to extend them. It's harder to add onto them because you have to create a new gable roof that comes in, which creates valleys, and it becomes a more complicated roof. When you do that, you want to make a big move when you can. And then one more view around the backside, you can see another one of these innies. Now, in terms of extruding this tight site, doesn't allow us to extend that gable form, because if we extend it out this direction, there's the hill that comes down, but even more difficult to overcome, there's a property line that's about 15 feet beyond this side of it. So we're limited in how far we can extend this way. And then back to the original, we're limited on how far we can extend the other way. So what we're really looking at is some opportunities to infill these corners to grab some space. Not the most efficient grabbing of space, because it's a lot of exterior wall to not create a lot of square footage. But really the south, this is the best opportunity to extend out this direction with a new gable roof. So I just wanted to do that as an overview before we talk about floor plans. So this is the simplest diagram of the existing library. You walk in the front door, there's a children's library here, the bathrooms and meeting rooms are over here, and really not a very large library compared to a lot of communities, and actually quite small compared to the population that you have now. It's about 20 years old. As one of the first steps, I did a full walkthrough and review of the condition of the existing building. It's in great shape for a 20-year-old building. It's been very well maintained. No major concerns on any of the building systems, nor the finishes. Some of the finishes are getting kind of tired. Like, it has the original finishes in all the bathroom that are tired. But for the most part, the big things that you would worry about, the mechanical systems are in good shape. One thing of note, one of the boilers is new. The other is original. So if a major project happens, we would need to upsize capacity anyway. So our recommendation would be keep the new one and get a slightly larger second. So you have the redundancy and you have the capacity in the same move. But keep that investment that you had before and play it forward. So I'm going to go very quickly through the schemes and focus on the one that we came to at the end. So we looked at schemes that ranged from rearrange the existing with a goal of trying to get a larger children's library. It doesn't really give you much else, but we were trying to create, as key things, a larger children's library and more meeting or study type of space. There is no space in there to break away and do a distance learning education situation or do testing, proctored testing, because it's all open, and just have quiet study. That doesn't exist, and it's common in most libraries. We don't gain a lot with just moving things around. Basically, that would just be a refresh. We looked at infilling corners, what can be gained with infilling some corners, and these are going to get each time a little bigger. That starts opening things up a little bit in the library. You can get that room, but it doesn't really give you any more program. It doesn't meet the current need or shortage of program capacity that we're seeing. We looked at a small addition to the south, which doesn't look like a lot, but starts getting you a little bit more because it creates the opportunity to start getting the right number of study rooms. And based on the public feedback, we think the right number is about four of these. the input from the class at the high school and middle school today was invaluable in seeing how the teens will be using it. This library is more heavily used by teens than any I've worked on across the state. And you have good kids in Unalaska. The feedback was really great from them today. Nice kids. I'd be proud to have them as my kids. Then we moved into the larger expansion options. So this gets pretty much all of the expansion that you could get on the west, the extension of that gable. We couldn't extend the whole thing because the property line comes right up to this corner almost and angles here and out. So it grabs most of the west and then starts looking at larger expansions to the south. And I want to point out one key thing because I hadn't really picked up on this till earlier, but so this expansion to the south above just extends that roof as far as you can and still have the headroom, which means adding onto that later would be very difficult. So it's kind of a one-time move on the south, whereas this one and the subsequent one create a new gable that heads south, and you could do a subsequent fairly sizable expansion. Now what we saw in these larger ones is now we're getting to a place where we're meeting all the current needs, and probably this is a 20-year project. You wouldn't have a need for another expansion for 20 years on this particular expansion. So this was that one, and then we did a variation where we did a bigger move on the south and smaller moves here and here. These were mainly just to get everybody thinking differently about how to expand the library, put the study rooms here as you moved in. This started working quite nice down here with the children and the young adults areas getting larger. In all of the smaller ones, the young adult teen space was compromised, and right now it is. So that's why if you go there between 2:30 and 6:30, the teens have taken over everything, and it's very hard for the adults to have a place to study because so many teens use this, being right next to the rec center, that it really gets used up. So what I really wanted to do was get to kind of what the public seems to be strongly advocating for, and what we worked through with the public last night, the kids this morning, and then refined with staff this afternoon. And that is an expansion, which this number here is 3,250 square feet. That's a fairly modest expansion for an Alaskan library, so it's not shooting the moon at all. It feels like a sustainable move. I've put together an order of magnitude cost of $4.5 million for this. Some of the range of the other ones you saw were from $2 million up to this $4.5 million. What we heard pretty consistently and quite clear and loud from the public was, if we're going to invest, let's make an investment that's going to get us the 20 years rather than just buying us some time now, because it costs so much to bring a project like this to Unalaska. Why do that two times in 20 years? Do it once and get it right. And this basically gets you there. And so this is it, the hand-drawn thing. So it kind of converges them all, but takes the refinements that we had from the kids. So one thing that it does that I didn't expect was this area expansion to the south gets you the larger children's area. So now in the children's area of this size, you can support story time, you can support story time activities, space for parents to hang out. It's really what a children's library should be. But I'm probably more excited about this teen space. So the teens in Unalaska want a place that they can gather and study together in larger groups than I'm used to seeing. They were saying 12 to 15. And so in response to that, and they want to be louder. They don't want to be hushed as much as the library. They're respectful, but they want to be able to talk. So we've got this size space in other libraries in Alaska, but not in this way where it's separated, but highly visible from a new circulation desk. So you can see what's going on. Teens aren't going to get in trouble, but they have their space to do their thing. And then we divide that from the children's area with a movable wall. So at those times when you have a Dr. Seuss type of event, you now have a space. You can see the size of this meeting space compared to the existing. Right now they pack it into this tiny room. And we didn't want to build a meeting room just for that, because you don't build the church for Easter Sunday. But this simple move of putting the teens in this adjacency and a movable wall, which can be quite good acoustically now, created that big space. And it also creates a lot of opportunity for different types of activities without specifically building a meeting space of that size. And then we combined a couple study rooms over here for some larger group type of activities, whether that be college students or teens or any type of nonprofit group that might be looking for a place to meet. And through the creation of these rooms, we're able to let the Hudson Room, which is the Alaskana and Aleutian collection, be what it really wants to be, which is a living room for the library. Right now, it's struggling because it doubles as the secondary meeting room, which means you don't have a great quiet place to go and read and enjoy the collection that's in there and just read quietly. So it got that in. And there's some other neat things that came out of this that I probably won't. Oh, another thing, we opened up the lobby here on the entry, so it's not as crushed, not as confusing, so that there's a larger place to go and wait for your ride or talk more loudly. So I think that in the big picture, moving forward, we'd like to push pre-development towards completion, which means refining this into a concept design, doing real cost estimating rather than my order of magnitude cost estimating, and then come back with a concept design in January, February that becomes the basis of a capital improvement project. And right now we're estimating that that capital improvement project is on the range of $4.5 million. And I feel pretty good about that. That's got contingency in that number. You know, it may go down a little, it probably won't go up a lot. By comparison, the earlier schemes, when we hit one that kind of gets you a 10-year leap forward, it's in the $3 million range. Moving forward from here, we could develop two schemes, a more modest scheme and this scheme. We could develop this scheme as one where you could incrementally take one or two bites out of it, depending on where the funding scheme is. I think tonight I'm interested in feedback from the council on how you feel about this project and what you might like to see moving forward, how we break that down. And I'm going to unplug this. Well, maybe if I turn the mic off. Just unplug this so it doesn't buzz while we ask questions. I can plug it back in if we have to look at the drawings.
Okay, council questions, and then we'll go to the public after we do a round with the council. Roger.
Yeah, I like your idea of let's make sure we do enough to make it worth it. And so on that note, I'd love to have the picture back up there, okay. Buzz.
I'll
and
get
all.
The Buzz picture.
I'm sorry, but not being a builder or an architect and knowing nothing structurally, why are we not centering that ridge and picking up the whole width of the building? So if we do have to take another bite at this at 20 years, we're not limited to half the width of the building to continue that gable. We could have the full width of the building and continue that gable.
Are you talking about the west gable?
Nope,
or the south
that
gable?
One. Does
so the south gable really wants to be the width of this opening to have the roof pitch match what you currently have. And what I've done is spread it out to this full width of the library here, and that starts getting a little bit shallow for a metal roof. So if we went the full width without raising the ridge significantly, which is structural, so it's kind of maximizing what we can get.
I understand.
Yeah. Okay,
thank you.
Got it. Yeah.
Okay, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So let's see. The meeting room, you know, I've attended several meetings in there, and it's always really cramped. Is there a way to maybe infill that space right there where your cursor is to get more meeting room space?
We did. We looked at that in some of the early options to increase the size of that room. That's an expensive little piece of real estate to fill in because you build so much exterior wall to get not much square footage. So it can be done, but it was the least cost-effective move on the building. And nothing that we're proposing here precludes you from doing that. It's the kind of thing that you could do in the future, or when you get to actual design and moving forward, you might design that as an additive alternate, because it'd be nice to have it done, but I mean, that'd probably be a good move, an additive alternate for the bidding environment.
Dennis?
Yeah, I had that same question in my mind, but thanks for asking that, Dave. I do like the idea of making this a 20-year project, where we, you know, it's a well-used facility, and I'm in favor of anything that has to do with the ability for people to learn.
Long?
I agree that the 20-year expansion is better, but on the thin room, is that a capacity of 15 students? That what you?
Which room?
The green one on the left. Yeah.
No, that would be quite a lot more than 15 students. That just at the tables you can fit 16, but then they wanted some comfortable seats as well, and some, so it could easily comfortably sit 30 in there.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay. Wow.